What I wanted to talk to y'all about today is action that comes from presence. One of the things that I've seen a lot of and a tendency towards, and I think we've all observed it, is the blurring of boundaries. Multiple boundaries in multiple contexts, multiple formats. And a lot of that is a state of dissolution of structure, dissolution of form. If we decide that form and structure is evil, well, then just get rid of structure and form because it's bad and then everything's going to be okay, right? And I'm looking at this stuff and I'm going, oh, I don't think that's true at all. I would agree with their comrade Zizek on this one, that what we need is formality. We need more boundaries. We need more ways of interacting with each other that are structured, because that's what's, that's protective. That protects me from you and you from me and this from that and that from the other. We don't want things to be a boundary blurred mess. And I'm thinking, why is this, like, why is it happening? Why is there so much of this? And when I sort of change the focus from like a cultural societal level down to what I notice in human interactions on the daily, I'm seeing like a lot of blurred boundaries and interactions with physical space, with other people's bodies, with other people. And I'm like, I've had experiences recently where I'm like, I'm having people get a hold of me in a way that is not aggressive, but is not polite, is rude, or hold of things that they don't need to, that don't belong to them, that are mine. I mean, physically, like taking like somebody the other day, I was waiting to pay in a shop and I held my credit card in my hand and the lady behind the counter took it out of my hand. And I was like, that's mine. It's like, it's got my name on it. It's not yours. And just because I'm holding it here, this might not be the card I want to pay with. Because it was faster for her, she just took it out of my hand without looking at me. It was amazing. But I've seen a lot of that. A lot of people encroaching on each other's space, encroaching on each other's boundaries. And it bothers me because there's a temptation for me to wonder if there's a general tendency away from boundaried present interaction to a formless, messy, non-present interaction. One of the things that has been covered by other people is the effect of the technology that we're using now on a daily basis. You know, it can be 5, 6, 7 hours a day of human consciousness that an individual offers up to TV, phone, laptop, or more hours than that. Is one of the things it does is it does blur boundaries. It's a non-boundaried format, and it fractures consciousness. It fractures your consciousness. This thing of pulling out your phone, and listen, I do it. Pulling out your phone on an impulse, pulling out your phone thoughtlessly, without presence, and looking something up. Even if what you're looking up is like, what was the last thing I looked? The Hindu versus the Buddhist perceptions of the concept of Dharma. Well, that's pretty lofty shit, right? But that's the last thing I pulled out my phone to look up. Because I didn't mark that I was doing it consciously, it's not good. It's a fracturing of my consciousness. I'm not having one single line of consciousness and presence. I'm just going, I'm having a thought, and then I go, I want to know what that is. So I just go, and just pull this thing out, do this with my thumb, and then information is being consumed. When we are present, and most people are not very present now, they're not very present focused at all now, there's a different quality to the consciousness that's there. And I wouldn't want to suggest necessarily that it is more respectful of others, of other people, of other beings, of other things other than the self, but it seems to be. I mean, if any of you have ever done a retreat or spent time outside of your normal daily environment doing meditation, significant time, like maybe 6, 7 days, maybe for 3, 4 hours a day in an alternative environment, not your daily grind, you do act a bit differently with people. You do treat people with a different level and things, and you just become more aware, you just become more conscious, you just become more present, and you go, there is a thing, there it is, I see it, there is a person, oh, a person, instead of this ADHD chopped up style of processing tons of information that's exhausting and then greedily piling in more before this has even been processed and digested. Another thing I've seen a lot of is people compulsively taking action and being impulsive, like me pulling out my phone without thinking about it, compulsively and impulsively doing things. Is the tech making us more impulsive? I'm seeing people get involved in situations, saying things without thinking first, taking an action and doing things without thinking first, situations that are unfolding where they're trying to help, but they're adding to the chaos. If you see a situation unfolding where you think you can help, become present first and look at the situation objectively, use systems thinking and ask, what can I do that makes the whole of this better? What is my intent here? If my intent is XYZ, whatever you've defined your intent to be, how am I best manifesting it? Because sometimes sitting back and allowing what is unfolding to unfold is the right thing to do. It's not always the right thing to do to see a situation happen and then just compulsively shove your hand in the system as it unfolds, or start speaking and adding to the chaos, adding to the information that's present. Sometimes it's better to just observe, be present, and watch. There is a, behind all of this, when I'm interacting with people, I'm seeing an agitation. I'm feeling their agitation. I'm feeling the impatience and the frustration. And then even when people are happy and cheerful, they're happy and cheerful in this weird, giddy, semi-hysterical, like the laughter is like, they're like, this is weird. It almost sounds like a shout. It's shocking. I'm like, whoa, are you laughing or is that a karate ki? What are we doing right now? I'm going to sound like a stock record eventually, aren't I? I know I am. But there seems to be a value in coming back to the moment, dropping out of the story, not consuming content and in turn having the content consume you at this, you know, light speed pace all the time. The next WhatsApp conversation, the next Instagram post, the next Facebook story, the next thing from your favorite Tumblr account or news site, or maybe just give it a rest for a bit. Maybe like an hour or 2 hours and actually look around in the environment instead of being like this. You know how embarrassing it is that we're all like this? We're like bowed down looking at the palms of our hands and walking at the same time. Some dude walked into me yesterday. Well, in fact, we were on a single path. He first walked into a woman with a pit bull. Thankfully, a good-natured pit bull. But one of the big fellas who had a ball in his mouth. He was so pleased with his ball. I'd just been there. Waiting at the pedestrian crossing to cross over to where we were. And he looked at me and he goes, I've got a fucking ball. And I went, see that? And he went, this is my ball. I went, yeah, I can see that, mate. I went, yeah. I started wagging his tail because he'd shown me with his eyes. He was like, ball, you see? And I was like, I see. Good. Fucking, you just remember this, my ball. So anyway, we start walking along and there's a single path. And then this lady and her pit bull, and me, we have to get off the path because he's just head down. And he's 35 years old. He's not a kid. Head down in his phone, walking along. And I'm like, at what point do we just need to start slapping people around the face? At what point do I start sound like some middle-aged curmudgeon? It really feels like people have missed a few slaps. The lack of presence, the lack of awareness, and the crucial lack of humility. When I meet somebody who's humble now, I met somebody who's humble, really, truly humble and present. I met them 6 days ago and I was like, this is such an important moment for me. I'm so honored to meet you, because they were there. They were just there. The eyes were present. There was light in the eyes. They were there and they were humble. And I was like, oh, this is so wonderful. Sometimes it's good to do inversions, not in yoga, but that is good too, where we say, okay, everything seems to be the case that people are becoming too arrogant, too narcissistic. And I'm like, okay, I feel you, fam. But is it not also useful to ask, in what ways are we no longer humble? Because then you put into the mix of the conversation, of the dialogue, the solution. So in what ways are we not humble? When was the last time you met somebody who was humble? When was the last time you interacted with somebody and you just were like, oh, wow, this guy's really humble? I met some people on a plane the other day, and we chatted away. And they're youngish people on the way to Ibiza. And we had a chat, and they wanted to know what I did. So I told the guy what I did, and then he shared with me that he'd recently lost his brother. Recently lost his brother to suicide. And I spoke to him, and we chatted. And then he returned to his seat. I returned to my seat. And he was a little bit drunk. So he was talking louder than he thought. And I could hear him chatting to his boyfriend who sat down next to him. And he said, oh, what was, you know. Basically, the sum up of the conversation was they expected me to be full of shit. And the guy was like, no, he's actually really, he's not full of shit. He's really genuine. And he's so polite. He's so polite. And I was sat there and I was like, okay, I'm getting unfiltered feedback here. How do I feel about that? And I'm like, well, I don't think I'm polite particularly. I just think I'm not an arrogant, swaggering fucking piece of shit. It felt good to say that. It felt good to... Fucking hell. The swagger on every cunt now. I'm like, God damn. Some slaps need to be issued here. We're all going to die, right? Did you forget we're all mortal? We're all going to just be dead one day. Shadows and dust. We'll all be dead. None of this will matter. Nobody will remember. In a long enough period of time, all of this goes back to dust. Didn't Eckhart Tolle write a book called One Day Even the Sun Will Die? That's a really good perspective to maintain. Really good. I don't think I'm polite. I think that that guy is so used to talking to people who are living in their own nasty, egocentric, closed-off bubble that to speak to somebody who has the awareness not to do that, because I'm not a particularly polite person. I think I can be quite, like, impatient with people sometimes. But he told me where he was up to. He shared an experience with me. Said his brother had been an alcoholic for a long time, and then he died. He took his own life. And so, you know, it was awkward because we were standing up outside of a toilet on a plane flying in a tube full of people's breath at 500 miles an hour. But, you know, he wanted to have that. He chose to share that with me then and there. And I was like, okay, let me see if I can give you something inside of a 90-second interaction that might give you something you can think about when you wake up tomorrow and you sober up. And I don't know, what can you tell somebody? Maybe you can just listen. Maybe I can just be present and just hear what he has to say and just feedback what he's telling me and validate what he feels. Maybe that's enough, which is what I tried to do. To come from presence is not some weird, exotic, foreign, ancient thing. That's a mistake. That actually, now that we're here, that's actually a defense mechanism. I'm about to say something profound. It's forming. All of this shit of making presence, what we would typically associate with Hindu or Buddhist practice, foreign and ancient and other, is a defense mechanism. It absolves us of the responsibility of actually having to take on that discipline ourselves and to actually live. I know a lot of people who recognize what the Buddha's head looks like, mainly because there are statues friggin' everywhere of the Buddha's head, all over the place, in nightclubs, in restaurants, outside toilets, everywhere. I don't know that many people who could rattle off the Four Noble Truths without looking it up. Not many. I know a lot of people who've been to Bali, who've been to Thailand, who've been to India. They took the pictures. The pictures are up there on Instagram. They talk that talk, but there ain't much walk being walked at the moment. And this is a problem. I'm not sure which video I said it on. I've said it a couple of times now. I'm going to say it again here. It's the TP issue. You know, TPs. You know what TP is, right? Where you have six sticks that lean in to the middle, and then you put the canvas or the hide around it, and it makes a tent. If one or two of the sticks start leaning out, you have a weak teepee. If four of the sticks start leaning out, you start to not really have a teepee. You start to have something that's swaying a lot in the wind. If all the sticks start leaning out, you just have a bunch of hide and a bunch of sticks. We can't all abrogate responsibility. We can't all just be like, fuck it, I'm not going to do the right thing. Fuck it, I'll just live for me then. I'll just be a narcissistic, arrogant, egocentric piece of shit and take what I can and consume as much as I can and pretend that I'm not going to die and focus on cultivating my false self as much as I can through social media whilst ignoring the actual living, breathing, hurting human beings around me. We can't all do that. The teepee will fall. The teepee is falling. That's the title of my new book. I came to this country to be here to do two things, to run retreats and to finally finish my book. And my book will be called The Teepee Will Fall. Nobody's going to buy that. That's a shit name for a book. That's a terrible name for a book. The teepee Will Fall. I don't even think you need to do meditation. I don't even think you need to adopt some strange practice that has a funny Sanskrit name or listen to audio books by people from far away. Or I think you just need to be a little bit present. I think you just need to put your fucking phone down for a second, he said, holding his phone so that he could deliver the message. Just put the phone down and look around at the stuff that's there, at the things, at the humans in your environment. Some of you are out in an environment right now with humans. There are humans around you. Check them out. Look at them. Kind of an emotional state are they in? Are they happy? Are they sad? Are they agitated? Are they busy? What are they? Is there anything you could offer anybody in that environment? I'm not saying give them something, like materialistically, but you could talk to them. You know, sometimes I have an intention when I walk into an interaction with maybe somebody who's in customer services or somebody that I need to interact with. I might have an intention that I'll make them smile. I might have an intention that I'll converse with them and ask them how they are. And then when they answer, I'm gonna look at them. And in my own head, I'll switch into, it's kind of like a meditative state where I'll just stop thinking my thoughts and just listen to what they say and tune into them. The same way I would in coaching, just look at them and just listen. So how are you doing? And then just offer clear, unfractured consciousness. It's nothing grand. It's nothing fancy. It's just one human being looking at the other human being with my living, breathing, gammy, snotty eye holes. At the end of the day, that's what we're evolved for. That's the kind of creatures that we are. I'm going to read some of these comments and see if there's any questions there. Somebody hit me with a question. Unplugged is a great documentary. Thank you. When on retreat can we all go clubbing? There's no clubbing on my retreats, dude. But if you want to come on a retreat and club afterwards, that's up to you. There is like not one drop of alcohol or anything on a PTSD retreat. I'm really, really, really strict on that. Somebody asked me why the other day. And I was like, I mean, literally not one drop, because it's really easy to underestimate how much this subject matter is triggering of the people present, even if they're not feeling it. I had a psychiatrist, a very, very well-qualified, quite well-known psychiatrist from the north of England, come to one of my meetups once in Birkenhead. And I said, please don't drink. And for her own reasons, she chose in the break to go and get herself a glass of red wine, a small one. She drank half of it and we had an incident. Her incident, she started to go, the psychiatrist went into an emotional flashback. I was like, this is like, I like to have a laugh and tell jokes and silly stories and everything, but this is hard work, guys. Like you're pretty brave if you keep coming back and listening to me here, and you're super fucking brave if you actually do the courses. And if you get the courses, and if you actually do them and do the exercises, you're like level 10 for valor. It's tough stuff, because I really push your face in it. But I just do it in a way that's nice. Are you coming to Cincinnati, Ohio ever? I have no plans on it. I mean, if I want to meet people from Cincinnati, Ohio, I'll just keep going to California, because that's where all of you are. Everybody I'm meeting from California is from Ohio. Is your science, the inner critic website, working okay? Yep, that's up and running. How do you know if you're having an emotional flashback? Wow. It's a really, really deep question you've asked there, because I can't answer that without getting into internal boundaries. And, you know, take this in the spirit in which it's intended. If you're asking that, then we should consider the possibility that your internal boundaries are not very strong at the moment. The internal boundary between thoughts and emotions is not strong. Don't worry. That is fixable. If you go to spartanlifecoach.com, go to the homepage, scroll down, and put your email address in there. I have a free course called How to Stop Emotional Flashbacks. Do it. You, my friend, will need to do this with discipline. It must be 5 times a day. You'll need to do it for a month. After a month, when you've reduced the emotional flashbacks, you will start to distinguish between your authentic emotions and when you are responding in a way that is disproportionate and not in accordance with the context that is there. You'll feel it in your own body, but the moment there isn't that sovereignty there to be able to distinguish that. Don't worry about it. I was exactly there not that long ago, maybe 5 years ago, where I couldn't distinguish. I was very quite badly emotionally illiterate. I could distinguish an emotional flashback from normal emotions probably about 5 years ago. But even as recently as 2016, I had to get help, professional help, because I was very, very emotionally illiterate. And it was leaving me feeling depressed. I was depressed. Depressed enough to seek professional help to realize that I was very emotionally illiterate. Once you've done the Stop Emotional Flashback course, and if you really, really want to resolve this issue, I highly recommend getting the emotional literacy course and then working on that for 4 to 6 months. And if you're enjoying it, and you probably will be, keep doing it for a year. Are there spots left for the retreat? I haven't organized the retreat yet. I haven't moved into my house yet. But as soon as there are spots available, I'll post here on YouTube. I'll let people know through the newsletter. So that you need to be joined to the newsletter, which is on the website, spartanlifecoach.com. And then you'll be able to come along. How do we sign up for your retreat? That's how you do it. Can we bring weed? I kid. I mean, you can, just don't let me catch you with it. No, is the answer. There's no drugs and zero alcohol. It is... People think of Ibiza and they think of a party place, and it is without a doubt, but that's not what the overwhelming majority of this island is about. There are two towns that are party towns. The rest of the island is nature reserves and mountains and the sea and islands. It is, I've traveled extensively. It's one of the most beautiful places in the world I've ever been to, and the energy here is good. It is good. And I think, you know, partying and having fun is fantastic and it's good. But for the retreats, you will be getting nothing more than the enjoyment of a nice walk and a yoga session in the mornings. I've got a caterer sorted out, a really good lady. I went on a course here and ate her food, and she fed me all vegan food that was full of protein. It was friggin' delicious. So we'll be able to cater it. I've got somebody for catering. I have a yoga instructor who knows the island really well, and who's also going to act as kind of like a tour guide, who's going to help us. Like, we'll be doing activities every day as well. So she's going to help with that. Come to Bournemouth. I will not. How long are these retreats? Probably 5 or 6 days. Does society create these disorders on purpose, Richard? Well, society itself wouldn't. But if you mean, is there some force out there that does? There are conspiracies. 100% there are conspiracies. The disorders you're talking... I mean, these disorders aren't created by... I mean, narcissistic personality disorder and borderline personality disorder, psychopathy, histrionic, whatever you want, these are things that have existed since there was human consciousness. They are responses to trauma. They're aggressive responses to trauma. So no, like, society and people haven't created them. Are there people out there who have fostered them? Yes. Did they do it deliberately? I don't think it's of advantage to anybody to deliberately foster BPD or NPD. Not in such a direct, this equals that. But we live in a very, like, people are chatting now about wanting to overthrow capitalism. Like, look at all this evil. We need socialism. We need communism. Let's kill capitalism. And I'm like, no, Capitalism is fine, but what we have is it's very, very consumerist, and it's not being overseen very well. The power dynamic, let's leave it at this. The power dynamic in the current system of capitalism that we have is wrong, because the people who oversee it are the people who benefit the most from it. So there's no police. The police are policing themselves, and they're just doing whatever they want. So having people being very focused on superficial values happens to be one element of narcissism. It's a good question, because I wanted to do a video on how some social media has accidentally fostered personality disorders by mirroring the coordinates of the personality disorder. Let's just deal with one, so I'm not overfacing you with the answer. Reaction-seeking behavior. Facebook and Instagram is based totally on rewarding people for reaction-seeking behavior, creating a spectacle, creating reaction in the audience. And you say, well, that's benign. And I would say, it is. It is benign, which is why I wouldn't draw necessarily the straight line between A and B. Like, people have created personality disorders. What I would say to the social media execs is, hey guys, what you're doing here, it's fostering a narcissistic style. I don't think we've created a generation of people who have NPD. I don't think you can really do that, but you have fostered a generation of people who interact with a highly narcissistic style that would include very low levels of resilience, very high levels of entitlement, very low levels of empathy and compassion, a grandiose self-interested focus on generating a false image. What is Instagram and Facebook but that? So that would be like one example of how that plays out. But I actually think if it's conspiracy land, what is useful is to have people being passive, slobbish, thoughtless consumers, especially as our populations have expanded so exponentially in size. I mean, we really have a problem. So I'm a conspiracy theorist. I absolutely know that corporations, without a doubt, have put conspiracies in place. I know that governments have. The word conspiracy means literally it means con, with, spire, breathe, to breathe together. So when we conspire, but with malicious intent. It's with malicious intent, absolutely. However, I do look at governance and go, well, what are their options? You know, you can't have a population that jumps, what is it, 6 times in size inside of 100 years and not have to answer some very difficult questions about governance. And one of the answers is, this is a mob, a big mob. Like, in recorded human history, this size of mob has never existed. I was chatting to a guy the other day, an intelligent guy who works in finance, and he said to me, the population of the UK is 9 million. And I went, it's not 9 million, it's 60 million. The population of America just 2 weeks ago tipped to 330 million. The population of London and the surrounding boroughs, is 9 million. That is a huge number of human beings. And if they all revolt, there is nowhere near the number of police or military who have the resources or the training to deal with that. So would you not be tempted to keep them kind of obese, addicted to porn, addicted to social media, addicted to painkillers and so on and so forth, just to keep them quiet? I would be. What else are you going to do? Otherwise, you're going to have to stand up and say, listen, guys, you see all this fucking breeding we're doing and all this consuming we're doing? Yeah, the party's over. The party's over. It's done. I'll try it. I'll run for office on that and you see what happens to me. I predict I'd be the first assassination attempt would come in inside of about 10 days. I'll run on that. We have to stop. We can't breed like this. Imagine what the religious types would do to me if I said that. The religious types would go crazy if you said that to them. I'd just be like, we can't. Like, we live in a garden and there was 10 of us and everything was fine. There's now 10,000 of us. The garden's getting a bit cramped and it's a bit of a mess. We've got to stop breeding. We've got to stop consuming. You can't have a new pair of trainers every month anymore. Sorry about that. You start taking that away from people. I mean, we are, you know, we're all the way along. We're all the way along a certain track of history. And things will change. But I think it's now going to be through it. Now the changes will only come through desperation, because something bad would probably cheerful, hopeful, optimistic. Something bad would probably have to happen. So there are conspiracies, and then there's human nature, and there's what people want. There's no conspiracy to, you know, you can't force people to be on their phones all day. You can just make it appealing. You can't force people to eat McDonald's. You can just make it cheap, highly salted, highly flavored, tasty, satiating to the stupid monkey mind, and people will go, ooh, 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 me want, me eat. Nobody's doing this at gunpoint. It's just gone that way. But, you know, consumerism is an issue. Population is an issue. If we want to fix it, the changes would be wide-ranging, and they would be painful. Very painful. Imagine saying to a generation of people, it's one child only now. It's one child only. Oh, and by the way, there are certain swathes of society with a certain IQ and a certain amount of income. You need to start breeding, by the way, because you're not. Is that a system of governance you'd like to live under? I mean, where is this? Like, it's Big Brother world. It's like, you need to have kids. We specifically don't need any more of you. Imagine, like, you're managing stock in Asda, or what have we got in Trader Joe's? Trader Joe's is like Asda. Trader Joe's is the American Asda. You're managing stock and you're looking at the wine. No, don't choose wine. Oh my God. not wine. Oh dear. Let's avoid that one. You're doing nuts. And you go, there's too many fucking cashew nuts, but we have no peanuts. What are you going to do? What are you going to do? You've got to bring balance to the force on the nut shelf, or else the manager is going to come over and tell you off. You don't want to have a nation. It's poor governance to have a nation where a certain level of intelligence and likelihood of them offering more to society later on in life and everything else is having more kids than others. It's just not good. It's just not a good thing to do. So how do you do it? How do you do it? It's a tricky one. But, you know, under my benevolent dictatorship, look, just vote for me. A lot of things you used to do, you're not going to be able to do anymore. But you won't be sad and anxious anymore either. This is the trade-off. This is not a joke, actually. This is not a joke. The trade-off we made, social media and technology, we traded off likes for presents. We traded off follows for each other. Social media, as many have said, is anti-social media. It's unsocial media. We've lost each other. We've traded ourselves, our own sovereignty, and our connection to the tribe and to other human beings for things, for consumerism, for cheap consumerism. That's the trade-off. And this has generated a level of anxiety, depression, rage, frustration, unlike anything I think we would have seen in human history, because it's so unnatural. We're just living in such a fucking unnatural space now. So I would say, okay, that was our trade-off then. We need to move the other way. So I can offer you, you'll be happy, you'll be happier, but you won't be encouraged, and corporations won't be allowed to encourage you to compete with each other in a capitalist consumerist game, which is what social media ideology purest. It's competition. What's your capital? Your likes. What is the capitalism? What is the trade of social media? Follows and likes. That's your capital. What are you building? A brand. These are the words they use. A brand. You build a social media brand. That's your capitalism. It's ideology at its purest, and it's highly competitive. I'm not surrounded by fellow human beings and, you know, potential friends and and I'm surrounded by competitors in a game that is it was perfectly defined by the character of Littlefinger in the book Game of Thrones. Now that Game of Thrones has been absolutely destroyed by the series and they didn't go into this, which is such a shame. They completely lost the point. They completely lost the thread. But it was Littlefinger who defined one life philosophy for the Game of Thrones, which was mindless ambition. And his route to win the Game of Thrones, to become, to sit the throne, was he said, life is a ladder. Life is a ladder. You go up. You go up. Everybody has Littlefinger's avaricious, evil ambition written into them now. Life is a ladder and you go up. You should be going up. You should be ambitious and you should seek to rise. And that means others must go down, because this is how capitalism works, my friends. I am sorry to tell you, I did not invent the game, but we must play it. I'll answer another question. I stopped answering questions. Ask me one. Quickly now. There's no time. Somebody's ranting about liberals. There's no point ranting about liberals. There's no point ranting about Republicans. There's only people, and everybody is as confused as everybody else. Mariana Menendez says, the problem is most of the world population is obliged to do that just to live, to get a car, to go to work, get a work to pay the car, and the rent so you can live to go to work all day, every day. This is a problem, and I'm not going to get into it in this video. Did you see that the Democratic candidate, Andrew Yang, is running on a campaign, part of which is based on the idea of universal income? Everybody will be given an amount of money. Every American will be given an amount of money to cover rent and food. He will not be voted in. And if he gets close to being voted in, he's going to have a terrible, terrible accident. He's going to slip over in the shower and bang his head 15 times. I shouldn't joke, because it might actually happen, and then people will play this back and be like, he said it was him. It was him what done it. I mean, if that happens, that'll be a wonderful thing. But yeah, absolutely. This is another reason why people want to overthrow the system. I would argue that actually it's not capitalism that's the problem. It's that it's just a very, very predatory form that we have right now that's incredibly cruel and incredibly inhumane. It needs some kindness injecting into it, but you can't do that now, because the people who police the system are the people who benefit from it the most, as I said before. So revolution, comrades, revolution. That's the only thing that we can have now. We're going to have to string them up. cronyism, says AD. Yes, cronyism. Do you know when the retreats will be? Well, I think it would be cruel and unusual punishment to force people to come to Ibiza in August, because that's really the peak time. That's when, you know, the British schools break up on the 23rd, the Spanish, the French will be here as well. So flying in and out will be a pain. It's not going to be good. So I imagine the first will be September. I would like to do at least one a month, September, October, November, December, possibly even two a month. Emily says, I believe that people think if they don't have an upscale lifestyle, then capitalism is broken. I don't believe I'm here to earn money so I can have a 4,000 square foot house. That is a real problem, Emily. True. And I nearly said that to Mariana when she mentioned her point before. That's, I think, more of an American problem and a British problem. Like, our aspirations, like what we think is normal now, is insane. I know people who take conservatively, depending on if you include within the country, 16 to 20 holidays every year, at least. Sometimes as many as 30 holidays in a year, if you include like trips away within the country. Outside of the country, they would definitely take at least 8 a year. These are not like multimillionaires in their 50s who are semi-retired. These are millennials who are aged 33 and 32. The aspiration level is way too high. That is one of the things under my benevolent dictatorship that would be brought down. I'd just be like, nobody lives like that, guys. Unless you are a semi-retired multimillionaire, stop it. That's ridiculous. You shouldn't be aspiring to live like that. Mariana is from the north of Spain. Spain and Portugal are in a different situation economically. The average salary in Ibiza at the moment of a person from Ibiza, party capital of the world, right? Everybody knows about Ibiza. In America, if I say Ibiza, everybody knows where that is. The average salary of a person from Ibiza is 800 euros. A taxi driver during the peak of summer, if he works his arse off, might get up to 2,000 euros, but only for 2 or 3 months of the year. The rest of the time, most people are living on 800 euros, which is about 800 quid, which is around $1,000. It ain't much. I know people with degrees I know a girl who has a degree in finance who works in a bank. She's 30 years old. She lives in Portugal, actually. She's on 900 euros a month. There is a bigger problem than just people's aspirations being too high. Sometimes the system really genuinely just lets people down for a lot of reasons. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much for your time and for your attention. It is greatly appreciated. Whatever you do for the rest of the day, please try and do it with presence. Cheers.